Bonjour tout le monde, it's Kelly here for another episode of Presque Parisienne podcast. Dilara unfortunately won't be joining me for this episode. She had a last minute work commitment and had to travel today. So today it's just me, I'm alone in my home, and I'll be talking to you about the practicalities of teaching English in Paris. There are so many people who come to Paris to teach English. It's like the job for young people here to get a start in the job market, to network with like-minded expats, to meet new colleagues, and you know, ultimately to earn some money to subsidise their life here. I want to talk about my own experiences in the world of teaching English, and I want to go into this very aware that every teacher has a different experience. So I reached out to some of my friends. So I have some input from Raphael, and later I will play a recorded discussion that I had with my friend Olin, and our experiences are vastly different. So let's get into it. So you can start in the teaching game by getting TEFL qualified. There are so many on offer. Now, I paid about £200 for a 2-day in-person class and then a 20-hour online course, which was run by TEFL, which is Teaching English as a Foreign Language, and it's quite reputable. There's also the University of Cambridge website that offers a CELTA, which you can do in about 4 weeks. And again, that's just another way of saying teaching English to a non-English person. On top of that, these certificates are recognised in countries all over the world, which is like amazing. You can go and teach English anywhere in the world that you fancy if you can find a job. I would want to say here though that not all schools that offer teaching qualifications are legit. And I would look out for companies who say that a teaching job is guaranteed, because there will be some fees involved and maybe no job at the end of it. So really, really do your research. If you decide to come to France and you start looking for a job, you might find that teaching contracts seem to always be in a CDD. A CDD is a contrat durée déterminée, which loosely translated is a short-term temporary contract. There are also freelance positions, which over here is called auto-entrepreneur. I'm not going to go into too much detail, and me and Dilara want to cover working in France in general, so I'm just going to leave that there. All you have to know really is that full-time teaching contracts, in my experience, are very rare. Also, for a CDD contract, the pay can be very low, but as a freelancer, you tend to be able to negotiate your rate. You will also find some schools look for different levels of experience. So Wall Street English, which is a very famous, very large English school, was looking for me to have a degree in English and not just be a native speaker with a command of the language, which I found to be totally excessive. Other schools, though, may ask for like a minimum of 200 hours teaching experience before they'll hire you. There are jobs available teaching children and adults. I taught adults only. I had zero interest in teaching children. However, my very first job was a guardian for two kids in the suburbs whose parents wanted a native English speaker to be with them through the day and teach them. Now, be careful signing up to these quote-unquote language schools, because you're not going to be a teacher. You're going to be a nanny. For one school that I worked for, they set the curriculum for the company after a learning needs analysis on the level of the students. This LNA tended to work really well for individuals, but it wasn't great for groups. So, for example, I would be assigned to go and teach basic telephony skills, but no one in the group actually had a job on the phone, and nor were they customer facing. So the system kind of broke down a little bit, and it made for some really awkward introductions, and it was a really embarrassing start to the course for me. A lot of companies and employers, and some individuals as well, want to study to pass their TOEIC, and that's the Test of English for International Communication, or their BULATS, which is a business language testing service. So these lessons, if you were assigned to a TOEIC or a BULATS student, the lessons were very targeted to help them pass those exams. I really enjoy group teaching. It was always fun to facilitate group activities, and it was a nice callback to the skills that I'd learned in my training job in Glasgow. One-to-one lessons were also really fun, depending on the relationship that you'd created with your student. Some people got really personal with me, telling me all the office gossip and talking to me about their personal lives, and honestly, I was kind of happy to listen for the most part, as long as they used the correct tense and did their homework. So let's talk about the pay. I was only paid a minimum wage for the hours that I taught. This isn't the same for every school, but this was definitely my experience, and I want to explain what this actually meant in my reality. So if there was no preset curriculum, which I just talked about, for your student or for your group, I had to create those lessons based on the needs of that student. I had to decide the weak points and find the suitable material for them to practice and study. Now, this could be extremely challenging, but the good thing about having prepared different lessons is that you could have them handy in a folder and then just recycle them for different students. So you start to build a sort of dossier of lessons for each sort of grammar point. This is when I started to learn to be a little bit more flexible as a teacher, and you only get that from experience. Working with other experienced teachers at the school was really helpful, and they showed me loads of materials that were made available to me, and also their favourite books and their audios, podcasts and whatever YouTube videos that they would use. Often there was really lengthy discussions about how best to teach a certain grammar point or which article or worksheet to use, which actually saved us all time. And I can tell you right here that no one is more passionate about their job than an English teacher. Some teaching jobs I was assigned to, I had to do the admin after class, which helped me keep track of the progress of the student and know what they'd actually learned before. I wasn't paid for that time either. And often, if you're teaching, you're deployed to a certain business somewhere in the city, and this could literally be anywhere. Your schedule is actually created by someone else, and you have to take the transport to get there. You could be on a train for a really, really long time, and you're not paid for that time either. So some of the places that I was deployed to, I went to a company called Veolia, which is a waste management company. I worked for a different company. It was a pharmaceutical company called Sanofi. That was quite interesting. I met lots of interesting people who had really interesting jobs. And my favourite company to be deployed to was TF1, which is it was a television station over here. And I got to meet producers and people who sold air. Literally, they sold space on in between TV shows for advertising, and you got to learn all of these really interesting things about the sort of inside of their job. And also, I got taken on a private tour of the TF1 studios, which was totally cool. I also went to work once in a Eurosport, but those students didn't really last very long. I don't really think they liked me that much. So I didn't get paid for any holidays. If I didn't work, I didn't get paid. I didn't get the Navigo reimbursed for public transport. The Navigo is like a card, like you fill up every month, and then you can beep yourself into metros and trains. And most companies, if you have a permanent contract, will subsidise that for you, but not in this case. You don't get mutuel insurance. Again, we'll cover this in detail when we're talking about working in France. But I was lucky enough to get a ticket restaurant, which kind of subsidised some lunches and some meals, which was just as well because the school was based on the Champs-Élysées and everything was super expensive. So that's the logistics and the sort of practicalities. But what's it like to teach French people English? We covered the French language a while back, and we said that we weren't going to go into what it's like to learn a language, but I want to talk about what it's like to teach a language. When I did my TEFL course and planned to come to France, I wasn't really sure that there was a demand for English teachers in a big cosmopolitan city like Paris, but man, I was mistaken. The level of English here is generally okay, but the majority of my students had not spoken English since school, and by all accounts from them, the French school system wasn't really the best at giving English lessons. And there's this really famous phrase that every French person knows, and it's "Brian is in the kitchen." If you say that to a French person, they will know straight away that you're referring to shitty English teachers in school. One of the main reasons I found that people signed up for English lessons, which were often offered and paid for by the company as part of their training strategy, was to improve job prospects or improve their CV or their interview skills. and a lot of my students had aspirations to live and work in London. So on this subject, I mentioned before in an earlier episode that I connected with a personal conversation exchange who I became really good friends with, and he actually helped me find my first apartment in Paris. When we first met, he wanted help with an interview for a promotion that he was going for, a health and safety manager in a pharmaceutical company, which in the end he did get. A few years later, I connected with someone else on the same website who wanted help with an interview, and the position was in a health and safety at a pharmaceutical company, and I didn't really think anything of it until a few days later my friend texted me asking if I'd helped a guy with an interview, and it was my friend that interviewed him for the health and safety job. So he mentioned in his interview that he got help from a Scottish girl named Kelly. The guy didn't get the job, but that has like since became the biggest small world coincidence I have ever had in my life. But anyway, back to my teaching days. For the most part, the students themselves were like really motivated, and I think they enjoyed my lessons. Like, I got this from my feedback scores. They also valued having a native English speaker as their teacher, as some kind of maybe resented being taught English by someone whose English was their second language. I spoke with my good friend and former colleague Raphael, who had had experience as a non-native English speaking teacher, and here's what he had to say. In 2006, he was getting some monthly employment indemnities and he didn't really need to worry about his income for a year. So he had the opportunity to try and put himself through some training for what he wanted to do. He had always wanted to work in English, and the best way to do that in France actually was to teach English. So he asked himself, how can he become an English teacher for adults in France? Well, the question was actually more specific than that. It was, how does he become an English teacher for adults as a non-native speaker? And what qualifications does he need? He did some research on the internet and he found he couldn't rely on anyone really, because he didn't know any English teachers for adults. And people gave him some vague information on the subject, some different answers, and none of them really sounded very reliable. Most of them also tried to push him into taking the long route to become a public school teacher, which was just not what he wanted to do. So his question then kind of became a bit more specific. How can I become an English teacher for adults, like, really fast? So this is when he found the University of Cambridge website, which I mentioned earlier. It responded to pretty much all the keywords that he'd typed in, and he discovered that he could do that in Paris. He was kind of struck at that time by, like, how does nobody seem to know about this? Like, how easy is this to apply for? Then came the other part of the question, the non-native speaker part. So he thought he had to take a test in order to prove a C2 level in English, which he had actually done the previous year. But to become an English teacher, he didn't have to take a test. There was like a written exercise and there was an interview on the phone, but before he knew it, he was granted access to all the training. And it turned out that in the end, not being a native speaker wasn't actually a problem. He actually discovered that he could also use it to his advantage. Since he learned English himself, he'd experienced the difficulties that a learner of a language would face and use that experience to make better lessons and a better quality of teaching. He applied to the ILC in France and he did the course there. He told me that he learned a few words in Welsh and he didn't really know why they were trying to get him to learn Welsh, but it was actually just to show what it would be like in a total beginner's shoes. And he found out that it was actually possible to teach someone who starts from absolute zero with a language with really simple and really effective techniques. So Raphael and I eventually met when we worked in the same school. I took over some of his students when he left and we were talking, and we realised that we'd gone through the same experiences in this school with like lessons prep, evaluations, some difficult students. But he went on to tell me that he had to quit the job and it absolutely tore his heart apart. But he had no choice. He could no longer cover the gap between making a decent living and actually his salary as a teacher. He was tired of running from one company to another, and he wasn't really fond of teaching business English, which unfortunately was a necessary evil in the industry. We all had to do it. He considers like his 6 months of teaching English one of his greatest achievements, and he still studies English and linguistics as a hobby, like myself. And you know, that shows what I mean by teachers being like passionate and loving what they do, like you really carry it with you. So moving on. Occasionally I met someone who was challenged by my accent. I don't think that I have a particularly strong Scottish accent, and I've gone out my way to dilute it for teaching so that I can be understood. But even at that, some students found it really intimidating and assumed actually that their assigned English teacher would talk like the Queen. Others kind of relished the challenge And I found it really fun when a French person would repeat to me in a Scottish accent. But I started to see a pattern in the words that were the hardest for them to understand when I said them. So any word with like an I as the second letter was kind of challenging. So like words like bin and wish, the difference between pin and pen, and then the difference between hungry and angry. A lot of French students were also embarrassed by their strong French accent and wanted to anglify it or Americanize it. Now the TH sound of th doesn't actually exist in French, and it comes out often as a z, for example. So I used to give the task of saying 3,333 and ask them to practice that in the mirror like every single day. I don't think most of them did this. I don't think any of them did it actually, but you have to explain that you really have to train your mouth to move in a completely different way and use a different part of your tongue and teeth if you want to soften your French accent. I found some students who were really motivated to learn, and they said that they were open to corrections and constructive feedback. And then when I gave them corrections, they were mad that I was correcting them. Usually because I'd learned it at school and I was then contradicting them on something that they already thought they knew. And some students did not like being told that they were wrong, and it made for a little bit of a combative lesson. And I was like, look, I'm the native speaker here. I know how this grammar works. Sometimes I can't always say why the things are the way they are, but trust me, what I'm telling you is right. So now I'm going to introduce you to our guest speaker and friend of the podcast, Olin, who has taken some time to share his teaching English story with me. You will notice a slight shift in sound quality.
I came to France in 2008 to teach English for 1 year as a university TA, basically. Meaning I wasn't a professor, but they put me in charge of these oral sessions with small groups of students. And I got this job because my American university had a sort of exchange. Recent graduates from who studied French could come here to teach English for a year, and vice versa. They could go to my university and help with the, you know, be a TA basically in the French department. Your only qualification being that you're a native speaker basically, and you have a degree, I guess. And so I expected to just sit with small groups of French kids, university students, and speak English on whatever they wanted to speak to. And you talk about pitfalls. Oh man, I discovered very quickly that my assumption was pretty wrong. First of all, their level was very low. Second of all, they did not come wanting to speak English.
Okay.
A lot of French people growing up are traumatized, I feel, by language instruction. Like, if you don't say it perfectly, it's not worth saying. My philosophy and most people's is that you have to make mistakes to learn. You have to get comfortable. You have to put yourself out there. Mm. And I would have to literally drag words from their mouth, you know, them kicking and screaming. They were terrified of speaking, of feeling ridiculous, of saying the wrong thing. And so I had to not just sit there and chit-chat. I had to build lesson plans that would make these people talk for, you know, 45 minutes, which at the start felt like impossible.
So you created your lesson plans. They weren't signed off by, like, the entity that structured this,
it was just nobody there. In the French university system, they don't really pay people to organize things almost at all. It's just staff. There might be a secretary,
right,
but otherwise it's university professors who have better things to do than see what a TA is working on. So it was like basically free reign to do whatever, you know.
So did you learn how to teach English while you were teaching English?
Absolutely. I have no TEFL certification.
Right.
Never did.
Okay. So no one gave you formal training on how to teach this language? You just made it up as you went?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Right,
It was intense at the start. And not long into the semester, one of their professors quit, and they had no one to replace them with. And so the lady who was kind of, you know, helped me get settled and kind of my manager, but didn't really manage me, you know, she said, Olin, we're in a tight spot. Can you fill in for this teacher for a couple weeks while we find someone to replace her? We're really in trouble. Meaning not just sit and chat with students or build my own thing, but like take over this official lesson plan, not lesson plan, but lessons with midterm exams and final exams. And I was completely overwhelmed by this, but I said, sure,
okay,
we got nothing better to do. And so I was in these lessons and I had to like teach them English grammar.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you know about the US, but we don't learn English grammar.
Right, okay.
We learn the difference between a noun and a verb, but never in my life had I heard present perfect.
Sure.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't have any TEFL training. I had nothing.
Mm-hmm.
So I realized, shit, if I'm going to teach these French students English, I have to kind of do it on their terms. So I went and learned what's an object, what's a subject.
You had
I
to learned kind of
what's,
learn
what's
English.
A continuous tense. Yeah, I had to learn yeah. English. They'd ask me, why do you use present continuous here and not, you know, and not present simple? And I didn't even know what, I had no frame of understanding the question.
Mm-hmm.
And I was embarrassed. So I learned that shit and found ways that I could understand it. And understanding it, found ways I could teach it. Definitely meeting French people in their own terms, which is hardcore grammar language. And that really allowed me to understand the English language mechanically in a way I never had before.
Mm-hmm.
And I love language and words, and help me understand French better too.
Mm-hmm.
Knowing that this is the way French people think, and knowing that a lot of these grammar words do translate to a certain extent between the languages. So yeah, my first year, it was like hard fought, like trying to be credible as a teacher of English. And as the year finished, the university wanted to hire me on as a sort of full time professor, but they couldn't do that. Legally, I didn't have that status.
Yeah.
They could have technically prolonged my lecture contract,
mm-hmm.
which was minimum wage, by the way, but they couldn't do that either because my university had this exchange and some other person was supposed to replace me in that position.
Okay.
As the year was ending, winding up, I was having the time of my life in France, living an amazing flat share, loving my life, making the minimum wage and broke, but like just exploring the city and just loving life with no idea what I do back in the US.
So like, were you on minimum wage for every hour that you worked, so all of that preparation for the courses, or was it just minimum wage for the hours you taught?
This contract as a lecturer pays you, it was like $1,200 a month, the minimum wage at, you know, in 2008. That covered basically not very much, 6 or 10 hours per week of oral lessons with French. When they gave me these other classes on top of it, they paid me 40 an hour. But as the year was ending up, I didn't want to leave, and I didn't have the right papers to be able to stay, and I ended up in a really fucked up situation. I found this language school from the magazine Fusec, hiring teachers, and this was not at all for university students, but mainly for adults. I interviewed there and explained my situation. And this lady, this one lady who owned and managed this tiny company called Hopkins Institute, which I don't think exists anymore, she was a weird, unbalanced, vindictive abuser. And she made it her business to hire people just like me, where my whole life and livelihood and ability to live in the country, everything was wrapped around her. And through this, I did the paperwork to have a new carte de séjour for the first time that I could renew. But the fee, like 6,000 euros or something, that you have to pay for this as a company to host a foreign worker,
mm-hmm.
she took that out of my salary. Yeah, she was horrible. And she would try to force you to work on the weekends and say, it's not class time, it's preparation time. That's part of your wages you're earning while you teach. While you teach, it sounds great. It was like 50 an hour.
Right.
But that did not at all cover preparation, which she micromanaged in a really intense way,
mm-hmm.
Travel, post work, paperwork, admin. It was
so this
awful.
Yeah, this sounds like the sort of thing you would need to look out for coming here, thinking that you're going to get a job as an English teacher and then be taken advantage of by this person.
I think mine was particularly weird and exceptional.
Yeah.
As soon as I could, I moved on from there. I wasn't stable enough to leave, but I had a paper that might have let me renew, and I just couldn't stand it anymore. And I got, using this paper, the récépissé de ma carte de séjour, using that, I was able to get hired at, I think it was Berlitz right away.
Okay.
You know, the big, big school, it doesn't really, it kind of closed down, but it was the biggest competitor, Wall Street Institute.
Oh, right, okay.
You know, Berlitz.
No, I've not heard of that one.
Yeah, huge. But, yeah, the contracts for these sorts of jobs, what they want you to have is a CDII, you know, CDI, intérimaire, so that they don't have to pay you except the hours you work. You know, like, if they can't guarantee you 40 hours a week,
mm-hmm.
a month, a week, sorry, on a light a month, they'll only pay you for the hours you worked. Anyway, Berlitz was a bit different. Berlitz had gave me a guarantee. They had language schools all over Paris. I worked at the one at Nation, and they guaranteed me a certain amount of hours per week. That was paid very badly, but it was nice, it was regular, I knew my hours. It was almost all my trainings were at the language center at Nation,
mm-hmm.
very close to my house at Porte de Montreuil. And I went back to University of Versailles, where they were so happy to give me some more, now that I had my papers figured out,
mm-hmm.
to give me some more teaching hours, like 40 euros an hour.
Like you said, like when you joined this university, mm-hmm. they weren't motivated, they didn't want to learn English. Did you see a difference between your university students and the students that were going through, like, the Berlitz school?
Basically, the Berlitz school and all the teaching I've done, I did since, was with adults. Yeah. Adults who had jobs, who wanted to improve their English professionally or personally, and because the French government makes training basically a human right if you have a job.
Yeah.
You know, you had the CPF, Compte Personnel de Formation, but there's basically either guaranteed money that accrues or hours of training that accrue that you can use. And now you can use it basically any way you want. Back when I was teaching, you had to justify why it applied to your job.
Yeah.
And so a big easy thing to do for big companies would say, hey, I want to work on my English. And yeah, anyway, I got my job at Berlitz not having a TEFL. That was the exception. They really wanted people to have a TEFL.
Mm-hmm.
But I said, hey, I've had all this other experience.
Mm-hmm.
And they gave me a little test and said, fine. But in terms of motivation, it was a lot of everything. You had business people who were very motivated and serious because they had like real things in their career that they felt like weren't working because of English. Having had the experience I had, understanding the mechanics of English and the grammar of English and why we say things the way we do now, it was really good and kind of empowering for me to be able to just figure out what the need was and help fill that need.
Yeah.
There's a lot of one-on-one, but there are also small groups, mm. and I love teaching small groups.
Same,
just animating a group is just a joy.
It was, yeah.
But in Berlitz, one of the big business streams for them was unemployed people. People between jobs have like a right to access a whole different fund of money for retraining.
Mm-hmm.
And the Pôle emploi will highly subsidize language training, for at least they did back then. And so we'd have a group of like six people come that we'd have all day, every day for weeks, depending on how much they each had accrued. But we'd have these groups for weeks, and I'd just see them on and off. We develop rapport, we develop relationship, they get to know each other. And at Berlitz, it would not be the same teacher all the time. You'd hop around, and they'd get different experiences. They'd get a Scottish accent teacher, they'd get an American accent teacher.
Yeah.
And it was a really nice workplace. Certainly didn't like all my coworkers. That sort of expat teaching job really attracts the full gamut of expats. Including some weirdos, young people, some old people who are just doing it because they've done it for 40 years.
Yeah.
After I did that for a number of years, I kind of wanted to move on from it a little bit. And Berlitz acquired this company called Telelong, which built e-learning. And they had some telephone, it started as a course by telephone company, but then they got into the technology side of it. I got hired at Telelong to build content. Building a lesson around a theme. And sometimes it was generic, but the really fun ones would be some industry would pay us, be like, we want our employees to have lessons on this specific theme.
Okay.
So I built a whole lesson around like leather tanning once. I love this job because I got to learn these random things. And I enjoyed that, and I met some good people. But that was a CDD, and they let me go. So for the first time in my life in France, I was unemployed. I didn't stay unemployed very long, but my next significant job was definitely the best, cushiest English teaching job I've ever had. I got hired on a CDI for a pretty good wage at Westmill International. And the reason I got hired there is because one of these unemployed people I taught at Berlitz took a liking to me. He got hired there as their head of marketing, and they needed an instructor, and he said, hey, Olin, he gave me a call and said, would you like to come interview for a job as a teacher? And I was unemployed, and I was like, why not? And yeah, it was this weird, old, rich dude who spent all his money, a lot of his money, building some e-learning, and no one wanted to buy it because it was a piece of shit. And so he bought a language school that had been doing really well in the 80s and 90s and then faded a bit. He bought this whole language school as a vehicle to sell his shitty e-learning tool. No, and he wanted to just eliminate all the instructors, but there's no business model for that. So like many language schools at this time, blended learning was the business model. Right? Yeah. So they need an instructor. And I worked there for a few years. And they sent me all over hell to companies to teach. But when you have an actual guaranteed monthly income, they can send me wherever the hell they want. Yeah. I'm getting paid that time.
Yep.
You know?
Exactly.
I was just cruising, listening to my podcast, just very light lesson planning. At this point in my language career, I had so many lessons in my head that I could meet any new learner and know 20 things I could do with them that would help them.
Yeah.
So lesson planning time shot way, way, way down.
Yeah, exactly.
I always carried around a whole binder of stuff that I knew worked well. And I did that for a few years, at which point I felt like I reached the end of my path. I wasn't learning anymore. Around that time, one of the wonderful people I worked with at Telelong said, "Hey, Olin, I just got a job at this French startup, and I'm designing courses, but they need an instructor. Would you like to come and interview?" So in 2019, I came to PeopleDoc and had an interview and another one and got hired here. And that was just discovering about myself that I wasn't just another expat who was making his living because I spoke English, but working in French for a French company and teaching something that wasn't English.
Mm-hmm.
It was a steep learning curve getting into the tech world and the IT, the HR world, but really, really empowering for me. Speaking English as a native speaker is like a door to so many places in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And just to be able to live and exist here in Paris with only that as like a credential was pretty amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Just having the experience of, it was a very exciting lifestyle for me.
Did you choose Paris? And
no.
If you chose Paris, why did it? So how did you end up actually teaching here in this city?
First time I came to Paris was on my way to Dijon, where I did a semester abroad when I was at uni. And I thought, when I came through Paris, I thought, God, what a cold, huge, unwelcoming city. I'll never live here. And then when I finished up my studies and I had this opportunity through my, you know, American university to come go to Paris and teach English for a year, I thought, why not?
Yeah, okay.
I'll figure out Paris.
So
I could have lived in Versailles, but I thought Paris would be more interesting.
Yeah, I've heard that Versailles only got one big house. Like, you know, it's probably quite expensive to live in that big house.
Like, why not?
Why not?
And I discovered I love Paris. Even, like, if you live here for a month or two, it's just, like, so much paperwork, so many annoying people, so many scammers, just trying to get a flat, trying to get a bank. It's horrible. But if you get those things and you're living somewhere you can afford, what an amazing city this is to be in.
Teaching English is a hard job with loads of moving parts and things to consider if you are coming here to do it. I ultimately stopped teaching because I found it lonely, travelling alone a lot and only speaking to students, mostly about themselves. I had no time to practice my French and I wanted some stability, but during my time teaching, I met some people who I still consider to be my best friends. Like Olin and Raphael, I learned loads of English grammar, which also gave me like a real love of language and words. And you know, for all the crappy working conditions and challenges, there is truly no job like it. So I hope you found this episode of Presque Parisienne podcast interesting and entertaining, and I really want to thank Olin and Raphael for their contributions to this episode. I would really love to hear from any other English teachers listening who would like to share their experiences. You can find us on Instagram, or you can email us any thoughts or questions, or, you know, just pop by and say hi. Delara and I will be back in 2 weeks' time with another episode. Until then, ciao.